Hit start. Okay, we appear to be rolling.
You know, it's never fair to make fun of someone for their default statements that they utter, but sometimes they just crack me up. We appear to be rolling.
Well, I...
Because literally that was the beginning of the last episode, too.
It's never a certainty with me, because there's many, many times when we've appeared to be rolling, and about, you know, a little bit of time in, I realize we are not, in fact, rolling.
Well, better that than 40 minutes in, hey, guess what?
This is true. So, right. Anyway, we are definitely rolling.
Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
We talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest.
Yep.
Usually it's movies, TV, DVDs.
Games.
HD.
HD.
Stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And I'm a little low-key today. I've been fighting a cold for a week and a half. My voice is going in and out.
Yeah, I'm kind of low-key too.
So,
it's an affectation of mine. It's no particular illness. Maybe, you know.
That's pretty funny. All right. Did we already say our names?
Yep.
Wow. I'm out of it. So, I guess we should launch into the two biggies, Superman and Pirates.
Superman.
Both of which we saw together.
Absolutely.
With other people. It wasn't just you and me.
It wasn't necessarily a date.
So
Superman Returns, we saw that, like, what, about 10 days ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. There were some problems, yep. But I really enjoyed it.
I just think Bryan Singer, he's like the guy for setting up a mythos on screen that you know, for today's age. I mean, the guy is just a genius. And the parts that I fell asleep in, because I was very tired.
Well, we went to a 10 o'clock, quote unquote, midnight screening.
That's right. So those are the parts I'm
on a school night, if you will.
That's right. Those are the parts I'm going to accuse of dragging. But the rest of the movie was just, it was like great on every single level. I was such a huge fan of the original Supermans. And this to me was exactly as he described it, a continuation of everything that was good and making the things that were bad better. It was great.
And I kind of have to say, and we were talking about it afterwards, generally speaking, a 10 o'clock movie is about the latest I can do now on a school night. I was so tired. I'm just, oh man, I was dog tired. And one of the problems that I felt the movie had was it was long.
Yeah.
It felt long. And towards the end, you definitely had that Return of the King 5 ending syndrome going on.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, I'm ready. I'm ready for this to complete.
Yeah, okay, on one level, it's like, it's Superman, it can't be too long. If it was 8 hours, I'd be happy. But on the other level, no, it was definitely too long of an experience for me.
And I sort of understand why they did it like that, but I felt the pacing of the coda, if you will, just took forever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's kind of like, well, they went with the actual climax of the movie with him lifting up this gigantic chunk of land. And then there was, I guess, they were aiming for an emotional climax, which was him in this, spoiler alert, kid thing. I kind of felt like that's what they were aiming for there, like as two separate climaxes. And even then, the emotional one kind of was like, oh, that's odd, because everyone, I mean, they tipped their hand that it was his kid earlier. It's not like that was a big revelation.
Yeah. So have you been following some of the reviews? They've been sort of saying explicitly or implicitly that he was going for a kind of a messiah thing.
Oh, well,
this.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that whole thing?
Parts of it were very obvious to me.
Yeah.
And parts of it, like when Jeffrey Wells said the whole empty bed with the sheets thing, I completely missed that. He said that was like his favorite part of the movie was that allusion to Jesus. Whereas I'm so stupid and dense, I was like, ooh.
Well, I guess it's a good thing because it works completely without that. And if that's what you're going in for, it works for that too, because it wasn't so overt. Because I was dense to 100% of it. And I was dense to like literally all of it. And then reading it later, I said, oh, I could see that. I could see that. So I guess that's the perfect kind of thing. Go for it.
And there were some other problems too. Like, you kind of have to, there's so many things you have to just take for granted and just deal with. Like the whole Clark Kent is gone for 5 years. And then when he shows, Superman's back, and oh, look, Clark Kent is back.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they take some steps towards addressing that, and then they just they deal with it with, oh, look, Clark does something goofy.
But I'll tell you what, though. Thank God.
And so I'm glad they did that and address it, and because there's so many movies where just a little beat like that solves a big problem, at least to my mind. But in this case, it didn't quite...
Well, thank God they didn't treat it in the comic book jokey sense where they made a joke around how dumb these people are because they can't recognize it. Because you know what? Simple fact is in the Superman universe, they don't see the two. They often have little questions, and I want them to treat it like Superman. I don't want them to make a big joke out of it.
And like the, you know, his big return moment is when he saves this plane. And when he saves his plane by grabbing onto the nose cone, that's just structurally, I think, impossible. Because that's where the radar dome is on a plane, and it's essentially hollow.
That said, I did like that whole sequence.
Oh, so did I. But, you know, he chooses to grab it is so, I think, structurally impossible that I was pulled out of it.
Yeah, that was a challenge. But I did love seeing that and how it pulled and how at the very end it ends. Right in the middle of this stadium, and I mean the way they did it, I didn't see that coming. At the end of the stadium, I thought, it was a perfect way to, unbeknownst to me, show how he was going to set up that Superman is back to a wide audience for a great thing. It was this perfect way of doing things.
I agree. I feel like I just want to get my negatives out of the way because I did like the film.
So what else didn't you like about it?
I did not like. Well, they. It was weird the way. Parker Posey's character mentioned to Kevin Lex Luthor, you know, it seems like you've been here before, and I kept waiting for that to pay off, and it never paid off. So I guess they're going to address that in the sequel.
Was that a reference to Superman 1 and 2 or something?
I haven't seen Superman 2 in a long time, so I don't know if
maybe he went to the Fortress of Solitude. Was he even in Superman 2? Was Luthor in that movie? Yeah,
I think so.
He was. That's right. He was. Yeah, maybe it was.
Although I have
Superman
to say,
too.
Thanks to the Tix parody, every time I see Fortress of Solitude, I think of Fortress of Fortitude. Anyway, there was that. I think Singer overused the theme. I got a little burned out of here's a triumphant moment with the theme. It seemed like that happened a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't. I love that theme. I got so damn excited when I saw the first spot for that theme. Well, when I saw that first trailer and I realized, oh, he's going to pull back the theme, I got excited.
Okay, but I really liked Brandon Routh, however you pronounce his name. I thought he did a pretty good job. And some of the comic beats I thought really worked well. They really, to my mind, fit in and didn't stick out. You know, like the Superman's gone. Superman didn't show up for the trial hearing. Do you think maybe Superman's a little pissed about that? You know, a lot. I thought that was really funny. The Lex Luthor brushing his teeth thing, I thought was really funny.
You know, it struck me, I can't remember the last enormous movie I've seen where they had an actor in it that I was completely, had never seen before in a single other thing. It just occurred to me how rare that is in this day and age. I think probably the last time was Hugh Jackman in X-Men. But then again, he was one of many, and there was a lot of recognizable people. And this is Superman, and I just thought that was very cool, and clearly Singer made the right decision. Because I'd be willing to bet he was getting massive pressure to pull in anybody and everybody that somebody recognized.
I really didn't have any problem with Kate Bosworth, aside from the fact that she looks way too young to have a five-year-old kid and still be a big shot reporter.
That's more of a trailer.
Well, no, I thought she was fine. I just think, Singer said the reason he chose her was because she can age well into the sequels.
Yeah,
which is fine. I just, you know, to go from Margot Kidder to, you know, to having a 5-year old son to looking like Kate Bosworth, it's that to me didn't ring quite true. And I wanted Cal Penn. Kumar of Harold and Kumar to maybe have a line of dialogue.
I know, it was like, wow, cool, he's here. And it was funny because there was you know, you could hear people in the audience kind of, oh my god, it's Kumar. You could hear him, and I get the distinct impression that had Singer or somebody been sitting in test screens, they would have realized, wow, this guy has a little bit of juice, we should play that up at least with one line or something. But he was kind of a non-entity in that movie.
That was disappointing. I would like to have seen him do a little more as a henchman. And I say something I really enjoyed was the the failure to resolve the romantic situation at the end.
Yep.
I thought the fact that it was a triangle and that Lois didn't leave Marsden's character.
Yep.
I thought that was really good. Yep. I thought that was great. I kept expecting him to die, and then she and Superman will hook up, and I was really happy that didn't happen.
Well, and speaking of the whole, you know, God, Jesus motif, him, he basically was a God and man, and seeing him go down and use his X-ray vision to look inside the house and see what's going on and realize his distance from that lifestyle, but his human, the portion of him that wants to be a person, you know, so drawn to it. It was powerful. And you're right. Completely unresolved. The other thing that I really liked was seeing him, they Singer had him like fly up in outer space and basically hang up there and absorb what's going on mm-hmm. in the globe and then go down and save people. And it was such a lyrical moment to see him up there meditating kind of. I just love that. And there was a scene that evoked the poster, which I love that poster of him kind of descending on Earth. And you see him doing that, and it just looked uniquely great. Cause that's what I always thought was crazy about a lot of them. They always made it out like he flew. And it's like, I always thought his superhero wouldn't be him, or his power wouldn't be him flying. It would be him having control over gravity. And that's what they more implied here, that he basically controls gravity as much as he's flying. And I loved that. So anyway, I really, really liked it.
And I did as well, which makes it all the more upsetting to me that Pirates of the Caribbean is so thoroughly budget wise or dollar wise kicking its butt.
Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean, we saw yesterday. 3 days. It's made $132 million, far and away the biggest opening in history. And by tomorrow, it will have made more than Superman did in 2 weeks. So it's gonna be up. Superman's at $140 million right now.
Well,
and it's not doing that well. It's not doing that bad. It's just Pirates of the Caribbean is just rolling right over it.
Yeah, I just...
If it's a consolation, Superman still did $20 million last weekend. So it's
I was becoming further and further down on Pirates as the reviews came in. And I think my favorite comment was from the Entertainment Weekly critic, who basically said, this makes me reevaluate the first movie as high art. And anyway, so we went in yesterday, and I was already down on it. And I didn't come out really with a changed opinion.
I thought, on the other hand, kind of liked it.
I know. And as did my now wife, and as did John. Well, I didn't really get John's reaction, but I think he liked it.
Yeah, he seemed to like it. I think he was hedging his bets a little because he didn't want to, you know, go in one direction or the other if we didn't like it as much. But he seemed to appreciate it.
And that's fine. You're all taking it in the popcorn vein, which is fine. But I could not get over that. I could not get over the fact it was just 2.5 hours of an excuse for special effects.
Well, you know what you needed to do at about the hour...
Get high?
No. At about the hour 1:30 mark, you need to fall asleep for 20 minutes. And then wake up refreshed, and then you could have enjoyed the rest of the movie more, as I did.
I don't understand how you can do
I was
that.
Tired. I don't know what happened, but
we
I'll
went
tell
to
you.
A noon screening.
I've just been working so
and
many hours.
It was what a pack of tech dorks we are. It's four of us. I said, and there was a 12 and a 12:01 screening. The 12 was on the bigger screen.
Yep.
So I send my wife in to get seats in that theater while I'm waiting for you two guys to show up like 5 minutes later. Mm-hmm. She calls me on the cell phone and says, there's no way we're getting four seats together. And I'm like, crap. So then I send one of you into the other screening, the 12:01, to see what the seat situation is in there. It's much better. So then I call my wife and say, we're going into the other one. What a ridiculous world we live in when we go to that much trouble with cell phones to try and get good seats.
Yeah.
And yet, I enjoyed it much better in that screening than rather having a split up and be in a completely packed theater just because we can get in a slightly larger screen.
That theater's pretty good. I don't have any problems with any of those seats.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, I'll tell you the thing that I liked the most about the movie, and Nancy, your wife, she wasn't impressed by him, but I loved those, the sea pirates.
I think the movie looked fantastic. Yeah. I think it looked gorgeous. I think it was But to me, it's like the whole reason for making the movie isn't we have a story we need to tell. It's we need to get as much money as possible from as many people as possible. And everyone, and you know what? Everyone's on board with that.
But you're getting money because you're
Orlando
you're
Bloom
delivering.
Knows he's not making high art.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp, who's a pretty good art film guy, knows he knows he's not making high art. He's having fun and he's making a ton of money.
Well, that said, I mean, I like the set pieces. They had this one set piece on this island that involved this rolling thing, and it was so stupid.
Water wheel, yeah,
the water wheel, but it was
beautiful.
Funny.
It was fun, and it
actually didn't come across as, I mean, it's obviously completely implausible, but it didn't completely come across as implausible.
No,
through the thing.
I agree.
But there was a couple attempts at humor that were just kind of stupid, but for the most part, I don't know. I just thought it was dumb.
To me, especially, you know, everyone, you know, when you hear people talk about special effects, the best way to use special effects is when people don't know it or when it serves the story. A lot of times you hear directors giving lip service to the fact that special effects serve the story. In this case, the opposite. It's all about special effects. It's all about barnacle pirates.
And well, every time I saw them, you couldn't help but sit there thinking, God damn, his face is it's moving.
Oh, no.
Constantly,
like I said,
and it was
gorgeous.
Incredible.
Incredibly well done, and yeah. To me, incredibly empty. And then I thought the pacing at the end was weird because I honestly didn't know as they were traveling back to the voodoo chick.
Yeah.
Is there going to be another half hour of stuff here?
Yeah, I couldn't get that either. It's hard to know whether it was over or not.
And then, spoiler alert, when what's-his-face Barbados Rush. Comes marching down the stairs, you know, and all the characters are like, oh, and I'm like, yawn. And then they ended and I was like, oh, and I leaned over to John and I'm like, oh. They left it open for a sequel. He laughed. But I just, it just left me feeling empty. And
all that money and they left you feeling empty.
And Jeffrey Wright's comment that at least Superman is about something kept going through my head. And I'm like, yeah. You know what? This makes me want to go give another $8 to Superman and reward them for trying to be about something. Yeah. Whereas Pirates, to me, while fun, is completely about separating me from my money. And they did it, and that makes me a little irritated.
See, I look at that as I go, of course it's separating me willingly because I'm going in there for stupid entertainment. That's kind of where I went.
Anyway, and then, is it just me, or has the trailer for Invincible been in front of everything?
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
I'm already overexposed on this... this period piece Eagles football thing.
Yeah, it's like, well, first of all, I'm a little ticked off because there's a pretty good movie by Werner Herzog about 5 years ago, called 3 years ago, called Invincible, that didn't even hardly get released in the U.S. And now, if I ever even mention the name, this stupid movie is going to come to mind, which drives me nuts.
All right.
But, yeah, I'm a little sickened of that. I like Mark Wahlberg, but whatever. What was the other trailer, though?
We had a Lady in the Water trailer.
Oh, and what's the deal? All of a sudden, the whole ethereal, it's a quiet little M. Night Shyamalan experience. What was he calling it? A fairy tale by M. Night.
Yeah, they've
switched
gears.
You notice you're not seeing the it's a fairy tale anymore.
They've switched marketing gears. And not only that, they brought up another question. Is she good or is she maybe bad?
Well, exactly.
And you're wondering, well, God, is that the twist? Is there a twist? Is that it? And I'm going to be pissed because I probably wouldn't have thought of that on my own.
The thing with me is that the whole movie or the all of a sudden it feels like people are freaking out in the marketing department and they have it's as if my sense is that Shyamalan was in control a couple of months ago. And suddenly because the money people are scared, they're throwing anything at the wall that sticks.
Well, and then there's this whole other drama going out where he wrote a book and basically supposedly part of it is about his suddenly antagonistic relationship with Disney.
It wasn't actually him that wrote a book. It was somebody else that wrote it, but it was with his 100% cooperation.
Like he took the script to Disney. They didn't want to do it. So then he's like, F you, I'll go to this other company. Yep. And then other people are saying, well, actually he has made the changes in the script that Disney said needed to be made. So really there's not even all that much there anymore.
And they were calling his, they were actually calling his, you know, this book just this incredible like career suicide thing because it was such he came across as so petty in this, how frustrated and angry he was at Disney. And I'm thinking, wow, what, talk about a career turnaround to have him be the highest guy in the land.
All that needs to happen is the movie makes a ton of money and no one's going to say boo about it.
And don't forget, with the exception of The Village, which didn't do that well, didn't do horribly, but did, but was basically a not a hit. He's made a ton of money for a lot of people. That's so true. It's amazing how they can kind of cred on him. It's sort of like Tom Cruise, where until Mission Impossible 3 came out, which still makes money, but it's not making the bank they were hoping for. He just makes massive money everywhere he goes. And they were sort of treating him like he was like damaged goods. So, but, oh, you know, the other trailer though, it was the first time I had seen the Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby thing. And you know what? I have been, I've so been not interested in this movie in any sense of the word, just because it smacks to me of classic Hollywood thinking, where somebody went into a pitch meeting and said, "Hey, I got a great idea." And it probably was like a one sentence pitch, or it wasn't even a sentence. It was a phrase. It was Will Ferrell NASCAR. And that's all they had to say. And somebody said 100.
If I was a movie exec and somebody pitched me that, I would have said, no, hell yes.
I'm saying, of course, what I'm saying is, but that's everything I hate about that.
Yeah.
I don't like movies like that. I don't really like Will Ferrell movies. And that's all it spoke to me of. That said, I finally saw this preview and I thought, a lot of that preview seemed kind of funny. And I started to think, maybe this isn't as bad as so many of the other things I did. It didn't seem as mugging. And maybe it's just me because they have an AC/DC song in there, and I'm always partial to trailers with AC/DC songs in them. But it just seemed more of a movie than I had thought before. I mean, obviously, we saw the entire movie in the trailer. It's him. There's some French guy that becomes his nemesis.
Who's played by Sasha, what's his face?
Oh, Sacha Cohen. Sacha Baron Cohen. Yeah.
Which I didn't recognize.
Which is totally cool.
I think it'll be a funny movie, but I got to say the trailer was only, to me, 25% funny.
Really?
Which is always a little worrisome on comedies.
Well, that's like about 20% more funny than most Will Ferrell things to me.
You're figuring they're pulling out their A jokes for the trailer. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a little less enthusiastic about it now.
Well, I had actual anger towards this thing beforehand, I guess you'd say. So this at least quelled it a little bit. So
let's do some other trailers. Borat.
Borat.
Oh man.
My God. That's got to be about the best trailer of the last 5 years.
I don't know. Explain
the trailer.
Well, it's shot like it's shot on 8mm film, and it's basically the character of Borat in Kazakhstan. Showing this is Kazakhstan, this is village I live in, this is my house, this is my cassette player, and then outside
pornos,
and then he kisses a woman and says, "This is my sister, number 4 prostitute, all of Kazakhstan." that bathing suit is hysterical. This bizarre thong that goes up to his shoulders and Dayglow green neon.
What I thought was perfect was it was the perfect. The fact is there's a whole bunch of us that have seen Ali G and we've seen the internet, but in actuality, it's probably a minority of the population.
Yeah,
so this was a great way to, I believe, introduce the Borat character to a bunch of people in a way that would get them intrigued by it and not pander to them and not kind of explain things. I thought it was great. I was very excited.
And I agree. I think this is going to be fantastic. What else do we have here on the old list? The Spider-Man teaser for Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, people are very excited seeing that at Superman.
Yeah,
I've been reading so much about Venom and this and that to me it was sort of like, okay, well, so that's how they visualized everything that I've been hearing for the last whatever. And it was good, but it wasn't any shock in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And also, we were in that Superman crowd, so it was a humongous number of nerds. So it was... so people were so... I just have that visceral reaction when I'm in there, and I go, okay, so here's the trailer. And of course, I'd already seen it on Apple earlier the day.
Yeah, me too.
But when you're hearing the people, and they probably all have too, but they're literally, and they're getting all excited, and you kind of just want to recede to the back and go, oh.
Exactly. You know, and to me, it's like, wow, that's still a year off. I don't know if I can handle another year of spider hype.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That being said, what was in the trailer looked good.
Yeah, it looked fantastic.
Yeah.
That Sandman looked I mean, just a half a second snippet.
Yeah, they just showed a small beat. But it was like,
wow, that's pretty cool.
Although, you know, I'm going to go into it a little trepidatiously.
Why?
Is that even a word?
Well,
with trepidation. Do I sound retarded looking using that word?
No.
Well,
those are two different questions.
You know, I didn't like the second one as much as everyone else on the planet did.
Yeah.
I liked it, but they'd had enough problems that I was pulled out.
You reserved your love of sequels for the Matrix sequel.
That's true.
You only had enough love to go around.
That's true. Sorry. I don't want to get into another Spider-Man 2 rant, but so hopefully this one does well. I mean, it's going to be a little harder. How are they going to explain the whole Venom thing? Because in the comics, it was like it was part of this whole bizarre Secret Wars thing, and it's an alien symbiote, and it's really evil.
No.
So we'll see. And Sam Raimi, I think, has said he doesn't like that whole over-the-top Venom tongue thing, which works well in comics, but doesn't necessarily translate well.
What is it? I honestly don't know the only thing I've read is by going to Wikipedia.
If you look at some of the images of Venom from the comic, it's this very over the top thing where it's this super long tongue that comes out, razor sharp teeth. Hmm. You know, Venom is this overly musculatured character. So it's, you know, it works. It's one of those things that works well in, or if you like it, it works well on the comic page, but doesn't necessarily translate well into something at all plausible on screen.
Yeah.
So we'll see. What else is? Oh, the Transformers teaser.
Transformers, robots in disguise.
And it's interesting because that was in front of pirates. So yep. It starts, and I turn to John and I say, "Do you know what this is?" And he says, "No." And I say, "Okay, good. I'm not going to tell you. I want to get your reaction." So it's the Mars lander thing that was lost. Really, it wasn't lost. It was one of the Transformers robots showing up and crushing it or something.
Yep, the Beagle.
And
it's a good trailer.
Although John and my wife both laughed.
Exactly. The
minute
not
in a good
saw,
way.
The minute the words Transformers came across, they snickered.
And Nancy leans over to me and says, "Does that mean that the Transformers come from Mars?" And I'm like, "Oh, they've got a problem then."
Well,
it's not reaching the broad audience they need to reach for it to be a super hit.
My feeling is if it's a big, great movie and it becomes clear it's going to be a hit. But you're right. They're not, in terms of any cachet of the name Transformers, I don't know. That's hard to say. That Transformers is a little bit younger than me. It's like about 8 years younger than me. If I was a little bit younger, it probably would have a more resonance with me. I just remember seeing my brother-in-law, who was 10 years younger than me, watching it. But if it's a big, cool movie, I think it's going to be a huge hit. If it's not, it's not. I don't think it has anything to do with anything. They're going to get over that Snickers thing. With things like this, that the Snickers thing is going to happen. I mean, the movie's 1 year away.
I know. I have to say, some of the stuff I've heard about how they're setting it up seems a little more plausible. Where
some of the little the pictures I've seen, you know, from the sets, they look kind of cool. There's like some cars they're doing, and you're seeing them, and then you're seeing a half transformed cars, and you got to catch them quick because invariably they end up on Ain't It Cool News, and about 20 minutes later they have an image removed at whatever request. But it looks pretty cool. It's almost as if they're secretly sending to Ain't It Cool News and then quietly asking them not to build up something.
That wouldn't surprise me.
But I'm actually looking forward to it. You know, for the most part, every Michael Bay movie is kind of how the reaction you had to Pirates of the Caribbean. They're unbelievably big and stupid, and for the most part, I've enjoyed them. You know, for what they are. Even Pearl Harbor, I enjoyed. So I'm thinking, if this is no different than that, I'm probably going to enjoy it.
Well, I think it's such an ambitious undertaking. I mean, I'll give them credit for even undertaking it.
Yeah.
So I imagine I will see it.
What's the story of the thing? It's like robots from another world come
basically, and they're looking for some, I think, a power source.
And there's
good robots and bad robots.
So when they say they transform, they transform into what? So you can't tell what they are.
It seems like it's a reaction to blend in.
Okay.
And you can kind of say, okay, that's a little plausible aside from the mechanics of it. But
yeah,
although it reminds me of the toys. Well, not so much the toys, but the cartoon series when there was a shrinking or enlarging principle. Like when one of the bad guys turned into a boombox.
Oh no.
And you're like, well, that's a little, and as he's turning into a boombox, shrinking. So the boombox is to scale. And then when he turns back into a robot, growing. So he's to scale with the other.
When he did car it, did he say jet. Size of a llama? He didn't say anything like that. Oh, that's
so that, that'll be interesting to see if they, they quite get that going. All right. What else? Not that. I think that's it for teasers.
Yeah.
We have or trailers. We also have some other random things. Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Really, Wells did a whole write-up on it and said this is the sideways of this year.
Yeah, I started to think that when he made that comment, I was going, yeah, the trailer's given that vibe.
I am really looking forward to it now, especially since you have procured for us passes to see it Thursday.
Well, I went to a website that says, give us your email address and they'll send you tickets.
Whatever, dude.
But yeah, we've got tickets. And it's like, apparently it's not actually coming out for over a month. So
we can Mustard Mayonnaise will have an early review. How awesome is that?
Exactly.
Anyway, so it's looking really good. And Wells said it's Carell's best work.
Yeah, you seeing him in the trailer, you can see
it's more nuanced and he gets to play a slightly different character.
Yeah, and I like the poster and the graphic theme to
really
that movie.
Really well done. It's pretty subtle.
Yeah.
And actually, and it makes me really respect subtlety because going back to Pirates, nothing about Pirates was subtle. No. It's the opposite movie of Little Miss Sunshine.
No, big acting, big everything.
Anyway. And I have to say, I have been watching The Office, the U.S. version.
Yep.
It's really good.
Ah, there you go.
I am genuinely surprised. I mean, I had heard it's good. It's not a complete surprise. I had heard it's good from other people, but it's one of those things where I'm trying not to watch new TV, but now that it's in reruns, I've got a little more TV time to devote. And so matched up with Earl, that's a great pair, Office and Earl.
Well, I'm very excited because Earl's coming on DVD and I've kind of consciously avoided it just because I thought, screw it, it's gonna be a DVD. I'd rather watch the whole thing straight
anyway
through.
Those are two fantastic shows and I am really impressed with The Office and especially Steve Carell and the whole cast, because the whole cast really makes it work.
The thing with The Office is that you had to give it distance between the first, if you watch the BBC one and then immediately go into the other one, it just is such a jarring thing, especially the first like 8 episodes, because they were literally taken almost verbatim from the BBC series. And then they moved into their own territory and it was painful. But if you gave it some time and realized on its own, it's terrific. And it's funny because a lot of people were just big naysayers of it. And what's his name? Ricky Gervais is a huge fan of the American version of it.
He's always, from day one, as they pitched it, I think he's always been very supportive of it. It has to be different.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, and really kudos to him for not undercutting it, you know, or damning it with faint praise or really working behind the scenes to say it sucked the way William Peterson has done with CSI.
I know, consistently. And he gets money for the other CSIs too. How cheap is that, man?
Anyway,
having said that, having watched some of the different CSIs on iTunes where I get to watch them a bunch, I do love Miami. It's a lot different. Like you're saying, it's a very specific element of 5 minutes of naked women, semi-naked women, and guns, and then the show. That said, the William Peterson version, I believe, is much better. Although the Miami one has its own draw. So, what else is on your list,
there,
dude?
What do we got here in terms? I just had to bring up Little Man and how much I hate anything surround. I'm not going to see the movie, and that's fine. I don't want to slam a movie that's not really trying to get my money anyway.
Yeah.
But the marketing for this thing is everywhere. There's commercials everywhere. There's posters everywhere. And it's just, this CGI reduced Sean Wayne. Is it Sean?
I don't know. I think it's Sean. I don't know.
One of the Wayans is CGI reduced and it's creepy. And every time I see it, I get creeped out and pissed off. And I just, leave me alone.
The thing that makes me mad about it. Careful. That's an actual laser. You're pointing at my eyeballs.
I'm putting it at the Coke cans.
The thing that makes me a little, frustrated about it is, so, you know, the never ending saga of the Dave Chappelle show season 3 is basically coming to an end tonight. They finally decided, screw it, we're never going to work with him. They're cobbling together basically 3 shows from all the sketches and they're putting them on. Okay, so that's cool. Because clearly Chappelle isn't going to do it, and we should see them and everything else. But what are they doing with these things is they're turning it into a promotion for Little Man. So who's hosting it? It's like Sean and Marlon Wayans are hosting the Chappelle Show. Mm. And I'm thinking, you know, nothing against them, but it sounds bad, but I kind of think the Chappelle Show as this independently great thing that should be a time capsule, not as an excuse for something else. And if we, and we see it 2 years later, we're never going to even think about Little Man, but we're going to be stuck with them basically promoting their stupid movie. Yeah. And unless they edit those things out of it.
The, with the plus side of that, yep. New tonight, new Reno 911.
I know, I can't wait. They were having like a Reno marathon, Reno 911 marathon yesterday, and I was forgetting how much I enjoyed that.
And I didn't see a lot of the last season. I don't know how they got around the fact that the department was disbanded.
Oh, they got in one episode. They had like the first episode. They had, if I remember right, like the guy who was the prosecutor ended up they catching him in like in flagrato doing something or whatever.
Was he streaking? Oh man, Reno
like
ended streakers.
Well, they ended up having, but it was cool because, like, for an episode, they had all these semi-famous people basically playing the Reno 911 people as the replacements, and it was kind of funny to see some semi. I can't even remember who they were, but it was funny. But that lasted about an episode.
That is such a great show, and there, I'd be interested to see if they can make it last for a movie length because they're doing Reno.
Are
911,
they doing a movie?
Reno 911 Miami. Is in post-production.
Reno 911 Miami. That's
funny. And you can look at it and say, well, it's essentially the same people that did Super Troopers, but...
You know, it turns out that's not true.
It's not?
I thought it was, and then I started looking at the names, and I go, no, it isn't. It's not even remotely.
I don't know where I
got it. No, it was... you probably got that idea from me, because I was
Jackass.
Thinking that. I'm sorry. But looking at it, it's basically... Like a couple of the people involved in it, such as Lieutenant Dangle and one other one, they're basically the creators and they are part of some improv troops. And then the other people are just basically actors on it.
Whatever.
But it's a brilliant show. It's just hilarious. And it's the best elements of Spinal Tap and other stuff where it's pretty clear.
I gotta think it's also the worst thing to ever happen to Reno.
Yeah.
There, you can't watch an episode of that and think, wow, I need to move there.
Yeah.
I mean, looking beyond the fact it's a show and it's fictitious, Reno really looks like an armpit.
Well, what's funny about it is it's not even filmed in Reno. The thing's filmed in
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am 100% positive.
Like filmed in the valley sort of things?
That's exactly where it's filmed. Now, they've done pickup shots in Reno. But the thing is definitely filmed in Los Angeles.
But even the stuff that you know was filmed in Reno just makes me ew. Like, yeah. And you're right, the pickup shots, the setting shots. But they look gross. Reno looks gross.
Well, the show is hilarious. Have you seen that other show that they do now on HBO, Dog Bites Man?
That's Comedy Central.
Comedy Central, I mean.
No.
It's essentially an extension of the whole thing. It's sort of... Daily Show and Reno 911 combined into one. And in parts of it, it's brilliant. Parts of it, it's painful. Basically what they're doing.
Oh, I know what the premise is.
Well, I didn't know if our listeners did, but we can go as if we
okay.
Did. So basically what the, I'm sorry, our listener, hey Preston. So basically what their premise is that they have, that they're going out and doing news reports for this small Spokane TV station, and they're interviewing and doing sub stories, but they're actually interviewing real people and not letting them know, a la The Daily Show. And like one of them, they went in to investigate bodybuilders, and they were going under the assumption that they're all taking steroids and it made their testicles very small. So it's funny to hear these people do it. And it's kind of dumb and goofy, but parts of it are just cringe inducing. Like they decided to interview this guy about the plight of gay people in Spokane, and they kept asking him, they kept cutting the interview short and going, can you just, you know, gay it up a little bit? Can you just say sister? And the guy goes, no, I don't speak that way. And they kept interrupting him, asking him to gay up his interview.
That's
and
pretty funny.
It was funny, but cringe inducing. It's hard for me to get through anyway.
Random note that came that I saw last week. Since Marvel is doing the Hulk sequel, on their own, they're
stuff?
Not doing it with Universal. I think it was Universal.
I think it was Universal.
I mean, basically they're just making a different film. They're not trying to do it as a sequel. They're just saying, pretend the other one didn't really exist. Here's another Hulk movie. So because they so clearly want to wash their hands of the Ang Lee version, which I liked.
So because of that though, didn't Universal have any rights to anything, or
I guess I don't. Yeah, clearly the rights situation allows Marvel to make another film on their own. But what I didn't like was the fact that Eric Bana's contract was with Universal, not with Marvel. So they're probably not using Eric Bana, which sucks because I really liked him.
The irony is I actually didn't like him in the first one, and I like Eric Bana.
Yeah.
My reason is because they hired him because of they'd seen him in the movie Chopper, and they'd seen his intensity. And this is a movie, whenever he wanted to be intense, he became a CGI character. So his actual intensity, that said, you know, I just watched Munich again last night, and I realized what an incredibly good actor the guy is. And I would have liked to seen him in the Hulk again, but I just didn't think there was as much there. That said, like you, I liked the first Hulk, and I liked it even better when I watched it again on DVD.
And there are some issues with it. Like the ending's a little weird, and almost nobody liked that whole Hulk dog thing. But
I
thought it made sense in the context.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite writers, Peter David,
yeah,
wrote like a 12-year run of the Hulk comic book.
Yeah.
And he's said numerous times, you know, people sort of reflexively want this Hulk smash version,
yeah,
where the Hulk just gets into fights. And he says, you know, it's really not that interesting for people to be screaming for the Rhino or the Abomination or any Hulk villain to show up, yeah, and have him get in a big fight. It's the Hulk's book. You know the Hulk is going to win. Really, what's the point? And so on his run, he did a lot of really interesting things that weren't just Hulk getting into a fight with whoever. And it seems like whenever there's like a new writer on the series, it's sort of the same thing. We're taking Hulk back to his roots, and it's basically a couple issues of Hulk smash.
Yep.
And then the sales go down and they bring on a new writer. And it sounds like they're doing the same thing with the movie. We're going to do a movie of Hulk smash because that's what the fans want, and it's probably going to be horrible.
Well, the thing that I just wonder what the hell's going on at Marvel with the getting rid of or exiling Avi Arad and then this move here. I just wonder, is this the start of incredibly cool things for Marvel, or is this the end of the end?
We'll see.
You know, and did you see the little note in Ain't It Cool News for the Hulk thing? They actually referred to it as a remake. They didn't even say it was like a sequel or anything. They actually said remake, and I'm going, remake of what? Because obviously if they didn't like the first one, they're not remaking it. But I don't know. I liked the Hulk, and in the years since, I've liked it even more when I've seen it. It was funny, that movie got hammered early on because of people were seeing test episode or test shots of the Hulk CGI, and I always loved that Hulk CGI. I thought he was great, and even the test ones I thought were great, even though they weren't quite finished. But I never understood why people had their guns out for that thing.
And I thought it worked really well. And I was at the San Diego Comic-Con 2001, and they one of the panels was, here's an hour of Hulk, or here's an hour of something. And anyway, they had test footage of the Hulk. I ended up sitting next to, in my row, was a bunch of guys who worked at ILM.
Oh, wow.
And I could tell from the way they were talking that it was some of the lead CGI guys, yep, and some of their workers, and they're trying to get a feeling for how the footage is going over. And, you know, ILM for me is just like, that was the dream job when I was growing up. If I could work there, they are gods. And so for me to be sitting next to some guys, I mean, granted, it wasn't like it was Phil Tippett or Dennis Muren, but, and I leaned over and I said, you know, I think you guys did a really great job. It looks fantastic. So I feel very good that I was able to say to the source guys, good job.
Yeah.
I feel very, and I didn't drool over myself or otherwise embarrass myself. Anyway, moving on.
Well, speaking of those, did you notice the end credits of Pirates that they, you know, they had the ILM crew, and then they had to farm out as all these movies when they get so big.
I was just
going to
say, a lot of these movies are now using a ton of different effects houses for different sequences.
So they had I counted, I think, like six different other groups. But there was one I noticed, I can't remember the name of it, but they literally pointedly did not list any of the people involved. They said the creative team at, and it listed the name of it. And I thought, God, how almost socialistic. It was weird because they had all these names and this one was like almost setting themselves apart as if they're like a factory or something. But anyway.
All right. We did that. I do want to mention something that has also been pissing me off lately, more so because it was in front of one of the commercials in front of a movie now is this new Sprite campaign.
Oh, the subliminal thing.
I hate that. It is so irritating to me. It is so, look how hip we are. Look how many things we can cram into an edit, you know, an Avid. And so purposely disturbing and so purposefully what it is. And I like Sprite and I almost want to not drink Sprite because of this ridiculous campaign that I hate. I can't articulate enough how much I hate this campaign.
I have a similar feeling towards the Yaris campaign. And oddly, I don't mind the Sprite campaign.
Wow. Okay, well, we're different there because I don't mind the Yaris campaign at all. But that Sprite
the one when they have those, is that that's the one where they have the cartoon Mexican wrestlers coming out?
Not Mexican. They have two big sumo wrestlers.
No, but there's a one. There's one where they have like some luchadoras coming out.
I haven't seen that.
Maybe it's the Honda Fit because they're like the same car basically. But anyway, they have a.
I thought you're talking about Sprite. Now you're talking about the.
Cars. No, I was talking about the Yaris campaign. The Yaris.
Whatever.
Campaign.
I haven't seen it.
Well, the thing about it, I was reading this article about Yaris, and I think the Sprite campaign. It's the same thing. The ad agencies involved with they're talking about who they're targeting for, and it's 18 to 34 year olds, and they have a high BS factor, so we don't want to lie to them in our ads. We want, and it's like, give me a break. It's geared towards a specific audience.
Well, and the thing is, especially when you're aiming towards teens or preteens, they know when they're being sold to.
Well, that was their point, so they have to do something that isn't. But what? It's like, no,
you're
we,
trying
we still
too hard.
Know.
You're trying yeah. when and. To me, that turns me off more than anything else is when you're trying too hard to tell me how cool you are.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm on the cusp of not being, they don't care about me anyway. I'm on the cusp of leaving the edge where they care about me. They really don't, and that's fine, but more and more, I have a feeling advertising is going to be pissing me off.
I'm in the age where if they want to care about me, they have to put literally like Ozzy Osbourne or AC/DC in the soundtrack, which used to not be there. But now they'll put him in an ad for like a Cadillac and I'm going and I'll be jam along and go, oh crap. They're sucking in my little reflexive internal memory of when
I
was like 14 years old.
Question the wisdom of Lust for Life as the cruise.
That's always
as the cruise industry anthem,
an ode to heroin is
oh, that is so ridiculous. All right, moving on. You wanted to talk about Ebert having his surgery.
Oh yeah, boy, that's really sad. Hopefully you're not getting much news out of there, but you know, he's had several surgeries. Apparently when he was a kid, he and like a lot of people, they had treated something in his throat with this radiation. They basically had these machines that they treated people with. And all of these people that had that happen when they were at a certain age developed cancer of their
salivary glands.
So he's had like three or four operations and apparently had a blood vessel explode a week ago. And he's been in critical, then stable condition. You're reading reports on there on the website about how he's doing and wishing him well. And his wife said the nicest comment, said, you know, the best thing you can do if you like Roger Ebert is go see some movies, and even the ones he gave a thumbs down to. And but I began to realize how much I've morphed from every critic to mostly just reading him. I respect him to a nth degree. I on about four separate occasions I've sent him an email for one thing or another, and on four separate occasions he sent me typically a one word reply, but he sent me a reply, and I just find the guy to be the coolest critic in the history of critics for a variety of reasons. A very giving person. Just last week I bought Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, the famous Russ Meyer movie that Roger Ebert wrote, that they did a special edition of where Roger Ebert talked about it. Mm-hmm. And hearing his memories of making this movie, I think, and how generous he is to all the other people, I just think it's great. And I sure hope he recovers, because the past couple of years when he talks funny and everything else, it reminds me of when Siskel was getting sick, and I just hope he's okay.
Yeah,
I really do.
Siskel and I share a birthday.
Really?
So, and I was probably one of the first people, because back when I worked at Cairo Radio,
yep.
I was doing a Mariners game or something. I don't know what it was on the weekend. But they have computers that are hooked into the AP wire feeds.
Yeah.
So you see things instantly. So I was probably one of the first people to see that Siskel had died, because I happened to be looking at the AP feed computer right when that came through.
Hmm.
So, and I just, I always feel kind of a connection to him because we both had the same birthday thing.
And he was a really cool guy. So I sure hope.
I remember once, I don't have that many memories of his specific reviews, but I remember he appeared on the Larry Sanders Show once.
Yeah.
That he was on the Larry Sanders Show, the same show that John Ritter was on.
Yep.
And John Ritter had been carrying this rage inside him because Gene Siskel had given a poor review to Problem Child, I think. And so John Ritter recites a line from the review, and Siskel goes, "I think that's actually what I said. Yeah, that was negative." And Siskel's just like, "Hey, how you doing?" And Ritter's just like, "But they might have even gotten into a fist fight, if I remember correctly."
Oh,
and one of them's in the green room holding their jaw.
Oh, why anyway, can't that Larry was Sanders come out in DVD.
We discussed that. Anyway, next on the list. Oh, you want to talk about the Microsoft iPod?
Oh yeah, did you see the reports?
It's funny how God this stuff goes around, because you and I are probably visiting the same tech nerd gadget websites, and you sort of see these things come and go, and it's like, oh, Microsoft's going to do an iPod killer, and then another comment: why would they do that? They've got a partnership set up where they partner with, you know, Creative or Rio or not Rio, but all these other companies making them, you know, and so why would they do that? And they're not going to do it. And oh, this blurry photograph is just bull honky. And then a month later, oh no, Microsoft's coming out with an iPod killer. It'll be out by Christmas.
Well,
it'll be wireless, and it'll be this, and it'll be that. And so the latest thing is it's real, and it's coming in time for Christmas.
The big thing about this announcement was that supposedly Microsoft is going to determine all the existing music that you've paid for through iTunes, and it's going to let you have that for free with whoever they partner with. Now they're claiming that they're going to do this, and they're basically going to pay off the content providers. That said, I actually can't see how they could do that unless they have a deal with those same musicians.
They said they'd pay the royalties.
So in other words, what they're doing, one of two things. They're gonna create a new version of the song, or they're gonna find a deal with the license partners. But again, there's some acts that are only on iTunes and some only on Rhapsody and so forth. So I'm just not quite sure how that would work.
I imagine they'd probably just make a deal because it's Microsoft and they have money to throw at any problem.
I wouldn't disagree. I'm just surprised they would announce it before having a deal.
And maybe, well, it's not officially announced. It's all rumors.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. And I don't know. I mean, to me, that would be a very smart move, because that would be a deal breaker for people wanting to move away from their iPod commitment. That said, I just can't imagine them doing anything better than Apple.
Yeah, and Apple already has. I mean,
and Apple's got their stuff waiting. There have been iPod killers
forever. Yeah. For as long as there's been an iPod, there's been iPod killers. None of them have succeeded, and yet you hear things like the Toshiba Gigabeat is maybe better than the iPod for various reasons, and yet nothing has killed the iPod. The other interesting thing about Microsoft making it is Microsoft doesn't do that much hardware. They do keyboards, mice. Yeah. And then there's the Xbox angle, and they do Xbox 360 really well. And actually, from what I hear, their keyboards and mice do pretty well.
Yep.
But this is different. This is like a little mini computer thing. And I don't know. That's interesting, because they really are treading into space where their partners already are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting
thing. But I mean,
My prediction is whatever they do, it will not be Apple killer. It will not be an iPod
probably
killer.
Not. But Microsoft has done a number of things. I mean, they're starting to pull the net together in terms of the Xbox 360 talking with, you know, your Windows Media Center Edition computer, and I think the market penetration on that is pretty small. But for those who choose to go that route, if they do this, it seems like they're really doing a good job of getting these devices to talk to each other and play well together.
Yeah.
So it might fit in really well to that scenario.
Well, the thing that kills me is every time I sit down, pull out my pocket PC, that it, using technology, it's essentially 5 years old, and my iPod, and I have both of them floating around in my pocket, and I keep going, there is no reason these both can't have the same stuff on them.
Yep.
And I don't know why. And so if Microsoft were to do that, just take basically a pocket PC, but give it a hard drive and audio visual capabilities, then I'd be all happy, because that's all I would care about. So I don't understand why they're not doing that. It sounds like they're talking about creating like this media platform that doesn't have the pocket PC. And I want to be able to check my email. I want to read eBooks, and I want to watch video and listen to songs. So
we'll see. Anyway. All right. So before, really the last thing that's on my list, aside from mentioning that Mila Jovovich did not take advantage of her 1 week opportunity to grab me. I wanted to mention that you've had your chance, Mila.
Well, you had the word out there, and she had her opportunity. So
the Emmys were announced, and I don't think either one of us has a list in front of us.
Well, the funny thing about the Emmys that they did something different this year, where they basically, instead of letting everybody choose, they basically, I think, had groups narrow it down to a smaller list, and then they had small groups pick from that smaller list. And what happened was everything got thrown out. So like all the big winners from last year didn't even get nominated. Desperate Housewives lost. The Practice, these are shows that like won Emmys last year for their lead thing, didn't even get nominated, which surprised everybody. So specifically people like James Gandolfini, who is like this perennial nominee, not even nominated.
And Battlestar Galactica also got
nothing. Didn't it get nothing? Which is stunning because of, where it was coming from.
I can't even really remember who got, I can't remember too many of the nominations. A few that I do remember are, is it Priscilla Presley? Is that her name?
Priscilla Presley from, I don't Earl. Know what show she's on.
Best Supporting Actress for Earl.
Oh, I didn't know that. Didn't know she was Joy. Even on that show.
I can't remember. Well, no, it's the chick who plays Joy, his wife.
Oh, no, that's Jamie Presley.
Jamie Presley.
Priscilla Presley would be his Elvis's ex-wife.
That's why I questioned the name. I thought it was one of the two. She got nominated.
Good for her.
Yeah, because she does a fantastic
job. They had a really cool article about 2 years ago in the New Yorker about her called... was it called like the Ingenue or something? And it was an article basically to say, what's it like to be a young struggling actress in Hollywood that's been in a few movies, like TNA movies, that's trying to break into something else, and basically just detailed her life. And you could see how hard she struggled and with what limited resources she has. And it's kind of see to have her get in a show and just take the bull by the horns and be a huge hit, because that article presented her midstream of a smaller part of her career, which was really cool. And they spent a lot of time dealing with it. And I think she's unbelievably perfect in that show. I mean, you couldn't get somebody better suited to come across as that kind of white trash. You had a little bit of brain power working behind her head, but not enough to be really smart. You know, she's really good at that thing. So
And then both for the best variety show, you had The Daily Show and The Colbert Report.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I thought that
Colbert Report got like four nominations, which and, is cool.
Letterman, and not The Tonight Show.
Good.
Tonight Show was not nominated for Best Friend. And I would imagine The Daily Show would probably win that category again. But then, you know what I suddenly want to look forward to? The crossover after The Daily Show wins, to see whatever Stephen Colbert does.
Yeah.
To snub or I just want that 30 seconds of comedy. That's what I'm looking forward to. How silly is that?
Yeah, I agree.
Well, God, there was an article in the Washington Times, which is a
conservative paper owned by the Reverend Young Sung Moon.
Yeah. So it's kind of a joke newspaper, but they had an article about the congressional representatives being interviewed by Colbert.
Oh yeah.
Did you read that?
Did
you see that article?
I did.
It was pretty interesting talking about, how some of them get the joke, and some of them know, and some of them try and be funny, but you're never going to win when Colbert's editing.
And it
astounded me that they said they would do like 2 hour interviews.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I know, to get what they get to. And they were, and who was it? Nancy Pelosi or somebody advise people not to do them. And I'm going, no, you're killing us. No. I haven't seen a single one of those reports that didn't ultimately make them look better and more human.
Not necessarily.
Even when they're, well, there's a couple that are kind of dumb. Well,
the guy because, they mentioned because, who had introduced no legislation.
Yeah.
And because, couldn't name more than three of the Ten Commandments.
And those are the peoples that deserve to look dumb. But if you have something to be proud of, if you've done something, you know, they're going to make fun of you, but you're not going to come across poorly.
Except, you know? God, they Colbert a couple weeks ago interviewed a Democratic representative of a district that covered Denver.
Yeah, I saw that. I kept asking her.
The Mile High Club.
And did she not, I couldn't tell if she was the world's most dense person in the world that had no awareness, because she betrayed no awareness of what the Mile High Club is.
How do you not know what that is? And yet, and I thought when he said, I'll get you an application form. And then he looked at the camera. That was one of the best looks at the camera I have ever seen.
Because he could not believe she didn't know.
This look on his face like, I'm not laughing. Do you respect me for not laughing right now, audience?
Oh,
you
my
should.
God.
Anyway, he was on top of his game with that look at the camera. Anyway.
Yep. I love the Colbert Report.
Now I can't remember who was nominated for Best Drama. I don't know if West Wing was nominated.
24 was. West Wing was. It was 24. Geez, I can't remember. But
yeah,
it wasn't.
How pathetic are we? We didn't get
it.
It
wasn't Lost, which was last year.
I know it wasn't
Lost. But it was, I think, maybe The Practice or something. But yeah. Anyways, it was a weird thing. Oh, and then South Park. You know, they have
people forget
it's not the series. You have to nominate individual episodes.
Yeah, you have to submit.
So the ones they chose to submit was their Scientology bashing episode.
That is so South Park.
A, it was a brilliant episode, but B, it was great.
Let's pick the one that had the most controversy this year.
I know.
And submit that. So the Tom Cruise has to deal with hearing about it some more.
The trapped in a closet thing.
Come out. I don't want to come out.
I think that's cool. It would be cool if it would win, because I'm not sure what their standards are. Is it like animation, or is it just the quality of the show? Because South Park is so clearly at the top of its game in terms of social satire and other stuff that it would be hard for me to imagine. I mean, I've always loved The Simpsons, but I don't think it can hold a candle to what South Park seems to be doing lately, at least. So I would hope that it would reflect that. That again, the Emmys are so random that you get excited about. The only one that really seems legitimately a decent set of awards is the Oscars. The others just seem kind of entirely random. The Emmys, the Grammys, they're all bizarre. So it's cool when somebody wins, but if they don't win, it's like you don't take too much offense by it.
Well, I mean, Arrested Development won Best Comedy.
Oh, it got a bunch of nominations,
and it didn't,
too.
But it won before, and that didn't help it survive.
Yeah, that's...
Which, you know, if you're a network, you're like, well, it won Best Comedy, but nobody's watching it.
You know what was weird is when that thing ended, I was seeing an interview with, what's his name, Hurwitz, the producer.
Oh, okay.
And, boy, you got the distinct impression he was tired of working on that show.
Really?
He was saying, yeah, well, things just ended, and it got to be a chore, and it was the weirdest interview. You got the feeling that... because they basically cut the commitment short early, and he was not happy working on that show anymore, creatively or something. It was the weirdest interview I'd ever seen. Huh. I had no idea. I was under the impression like the show was the greatest thing ever, and he was, it's sort of like Futurama, where you read these interviews where the people would be willing to jump into fire to go work on the show again. You got the impression from him he was happy and willing to move on.
Well, sometimes that's the way it is.
Yeah, I just was surprised because it seemed like the creative thing. It's the same with the, you know, the ending of Deadwood, which is going to end this season, and the producer is sort of not that upset that it's ending because he's got the reason it's ending is because HBO's picked up another series of his about some surfer dude, and he's like, yeah, I want to move on to that, and it's like, wow. It kind of throws you a little bit when you fall completely in love with the series, you're totally committed, and the person who creates it is no longer in love with that series and is sort of willing to move on. And you're going, man, you kind of assume he'd be as love with it as you are.
Well, that's, you know, when Aaron Sorkin was doing West Wing and Sports Night at the same time,
I still don't know how he's doing that.
Well, he was. I think he was high most of the time.
Even then, I mean, you can only sustain that. I mean, because he was so heavily involved in those series,
right,
with writing
and
everything.
ABC dropped Sports Night, And it sounded like Showtime was willing to pick it up, or another network. I think it was Showtime.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what? I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
I have to drop one. I'm going to choose to drop Sports Night. So
whenever I think I'm really busy in my job and multitasking or anything, and I really think I am legitimately busy, I think of Aaron Sorkin, circa, what is it, about 2002, and how hard he was working then.
Something I forgot to mention. So I was on my honeymoon last week for 3 days. By the way,
congratulations on your wedding. I'm very happy for you guys.
Well, thank you.
What were you thinking about your honeymoon?
Appreciate you saying that. We had neither one of us has any time off from work, so we went up to Whistler for a couple of days, and you know, all the hotels have the same in-room entertainment system, which is, so you turn on the TV and instantly you're bombarded with some random woman trying to sell you Return of the Pink Panther or something.
Oh no!
But I remember one night we ended up watching the second half of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yep.
And then they were on TBS and they were pimping Up Next, Torque. And I'm like, you know what? I want to see the first 5 minutes of this thing. So, and this was a motorcycle movie.
This is the one with Ice Cube in it, right?
No. Ice Cube. And so we ended up watching the first 10 minutes. It was so bad. I can't recall a film that was worse than this. I'm sure there is one.
It was like, the dialogue, everything was so cliched, and taking the like stunts, they were so overboard. You remember how you thought you were saying Mission Impossible 2 with the motorcycles overboard?
Oh, well, yeah,
this was like times 40.
Well, yeah, they were showing street bikes doing stuff, and this is in the commercials because I only saw the first 15 minutes. They were showing street bikes in the commercials doing stuff like in the woods, like on dirt or on surfaces that aren't asphalt.
Yeah.
Ridiculous that there's no way a street bike would do that on a non-stable surface.
Yeah.
Regardless of rider skill. It was so bad. So
it was a wonderful way to spend your honeymoon.
Oh, you know, we turned it off and went to sleep, but you know, and then I got to thinking, why did they call it Torque? Because
of the name.
Most of the motorcycle people I know, torque is not a leading measurement in the motorcycle world, from what I know. I'll qualify that because I've pretended to make motorcycle generalizations before and been wrong, but usually it's horsepower, 0 to 60.
No, it's indicative of
other measurements.
It's a movie all about the marketing of the movie, and the name sounds cool.
It does sound cool, but it's bizarre. It's just, I couldn't think of who gives a rip what the bike's torque is.
Yeah.
You know, generally V-twins have more torque than inline fours, but by and large, from what I can tell, the people that are into going fast on motorcycles generally don't give a rat's ass what the torque is.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I could not get over how bad that movie looked.
Matt, there are bad movies in this world. You got to learn to avoid them.
I know, but you know, first time I've been in Blockbuster in probably a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I went in there to kill some time looking to see if there were any good used DVDs to buy. And it's funny to see a sign that says our best deal ever, 3 for $20, right next to a sign that says our best deal ever, 4 for $20. looking through the DVDs and you're like, wow, Steven Seagal's getting a lot of work.
Oh, no.
Steven Seagal in Black Dawn or Dark Dawn, Steven Seagal in something or other.
Once the guy is willing to make about $400,000 a movie for 2 months work, that's all he has to do is show up. He isn't involved in any way. They're basically paying for him because they know that they can put it out on DVD and make their money back on DVD. That's all they're doing.
It's astounding.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's just creepy and horrible. Anyway.
My list is done. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, my list is done. Oh, I got some new DVDs. Got Munich. Got Herbie the Love Bug, the original, which was really sweet because they had a commentary track that was done before Buddy Hackett died with Buddy Hackett, Dean Jones, and Michelle Lee. And it was really sweet. There are these older guys reminiscing. And then I got, The Killing Fields, which was a brilliant movie I hadn't seen in 25 years. With an ending that just devastates you. It's this movie about this journalist, Sidney Schoenberg, and who was in Cambodia, and this translator he had named Dith Prawn, who got stuck in the killing fields for 4 years of there during the Khmer Rouge revolution. And at the end, under the strains now would seem very cliched, but at the time not. They have the soundtrack of Imagine, John Lennon's Imagine playing in the background as they meet up. And it's basically a love story, not a sexual love story, but two guys that were very committed, and then they hugged, and it was like, devastates you. It's a great movie, and it was cool to hear the director's commentary for it. So cool. And then Munich, I saw it again, and just even more so think it's just an incredibly brilliant brilliant movie. It was cool to see that movie again, although yet again it just kills me that Steven Spielberg does not do commentary tracks or anything else. There's no extras, no nothing, the bastard.
Anyway. There's a couple things coming up at the next couple of months I'm pretty excited about. Clerks 2.
Oh, I'm getting really excited. They keep showing different ads, and each one of them is like totally funny. It's like, how cool is that?
Clerks 2, Lady in the Water.
Yep.
There was a third one that I'm blanking on at the moment. The Clint Eastwood one.
Which one's that?
Well, he's doing two. Remember
the
about?
Oh,
the,
yeah. The one about the not the pilots. The heck is the?
Well, the World War II. The guy. I'm retarded. I can't remember the island that was on, but the guys that raised the flag
Iwo Jima,
the memorial.
That's the one. Yeah. Iwo Jima.
And then he's doing a movie from basically the American perspective and from the Japanese perspective.
Wow.
He's
doing two movies
two movies.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know if it's a film back to back sort of thing or not.
That's totally
or
cool.
how really connected they are, but essentially that's what it is.
He is so cool. Him and like Robert Altman, these people that are like in their 70s or even almost 80s, and they're at the top of their game taking creative risks. I find that so cool.
Yeah, but there's some good stuff coming out that will actually make me go see it in the theater versus like not wanting to deal with that experience anymore.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of that whole experience too, to tell you the truth.
Like there was yesterday at Pirates, we had some teenage girls or something behind us to the left, which I don't know if you heard because you were sleeping, but that's like... Talk about the target audience. They were just like, and just the things they would react to. You just
anything
want to smack them.
Orlando Bloom said they would giggle.
Not quite that vacuous, but you just want to turn around to them and go, please have some better taste in the things you choose to react to.
I know.
Oh, well. All right. So good stuff coming up. And there has been no new email. No email.
Yep.
I've got it set up so it carbon copy bounces to my Gmail account. So.
Nothing yet. Come on, folks. The address.
Questions, comments, rants, anything. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com.
Cool.
That's all I got.
That's all I got, too. So I am Richard.
I'm Matt. You've been listening to Mustard Ayonnaise. Thank you.
Get well soon, Roger.